Welcome, folks, to another TTJ Talk podcast produced by the Tech Juggernaut at ttjtech.net. Hey, grab that cup of coffee. It's time for some news updates and some other fun info. Trainer Cliff will be joining me a bit later on in today's TTJ Talk podcast. Well, let's get rolling right away. It is July 1st, 2019. The weather is beautiful, hot and sunny. Lovely summer. Time for lemonade and swimming pools, barbecues, and all those great things. And time for some of our TTJ summer promos. Discounts on services, training, and support packages, and so on. And so I highly encourage you to head on over to our website at ttjtech.net to check all that out. Our blog is there, and we've posted some info about that on the blog. You can also subscribe to our blog, follow it via email. So just visit ttjtech.net and you'll find out about that. I also would highly encourage you to follow us on Twitter at TalkTTJ. That is at TalkTTJ. And Periscope, TTJ Talk. We will be live streaming, and that is my first important announcement. 1 week from today, that is Monday, July the 8th, 2019, we will be live streaming. Cliff and I will do our first live streaming session. We will be discussing the idea of, well, the ideas of replacing a traditional computer with an iPad and replacing traditional television service with the Apple TV. And we'll do about an hour-long live stream, and we want to take your questions. So we need you to join us. That live stream will take place at 1 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Central. Of course, that's 11 Mountain and 10 a.m. Pacific. And it is 1 week from today, Monday, July 8th, 2019, beginning at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can submit your questions in the forms of voice messages by going to our website at anchor.fm. That's anchor.fm/thetechjuggernaut. But the Tech Juggernaut has hyphens between all the words, or dashes, whatever you want to call them. So it's anchor.fm/the-tech-juggernaut. There are links to that on our website as well. And you can actually send us voice messages for potential inclusion, no guarantees, but possible inclusion in the podcast. Keep them short, keep them quick and to the point, and we'll include them, hopefully, maybe, we'll see. But no promises, but we would love to be able to include a few of them. Also, there are other ways to submit questions to us. Of course, our extended hours chat service via iMessage. You can use Apple iMessage if you have it. If you don't, you can send email, and that is the Tech Juggernaut, no hyphens this time, but thetechjuggernaut@icloud.com. And finally, of course, at TalkTTJ on Twitter. So you'll be able to send questions in during our live stream. It will be on Periscope. So get the app, folks. It's free. It's awesome. It's great. If you have Twitter, you pretty much already have Periscope. You can sign in using your Twitter account. It's very straightforward. And I really highly encourage it. I would love for you to join us. We'd love to have lots and lots of great questions and discussion next week on Monday, July 8th at 1 p.m. Eastern for our TTJ Talk live stream, our very first one. And we'll be talking, as I said, about replacing the traditional computer with the iPad and replacing the traditional TV service with Apple TV. So along those lines, Trainer Cliff will be joining me here in a few minutes just to talk about some things. But before we do that, I just wanted to go over a couple of news items in the news recently, in the tech news, of course, that is. One of the biggest recently to make waves is that Johnny Ive, Sir Jonathan Ive, who has been designing Apple products for decades, as far as I know, will be leaving Apple. He is beginning his own design firm, and he is plans to have Apple as one of his primary clients. So Apple will continue to see the influence of Johnny Ive in their design work, because he'll be doing that, but from his own company. No longer will he be an Apple employee. This is interesting, you know, because when you see a legend, anytime you see somebody who truly has become legendary with the company, I mean, every one of the major Apple products we've seen that I can remember, there's always a video, and Johnny Ive is usually the narrator talking about the physical design of the iPhone and how beautiful it looks and why it was designed this way and so on. And so he's a major part of what we see in the front-facing, and that's, of course, not even taking into consideration what obviously goes on behind closed doors. And so I'm sure that he will be missed as a regular employee, but again, I would really encourage you to remember that his design work will continue for Apple, just not as an Apple employee. He will be working from his own design firm, and he calls Apple a primary client, I think, if I remember the terminology correctly. I apologize if I don't. And, you know, what always strikes me so funny about this, and we'll bring Cliff in here in a little bit and get his take on this too. What always strikes me about this is that anytime you hear this, there's all sorts of stories that start to crawl out of the woodwork then. Oh, you know, well, Johnny Ive missed a lot of meetings. He didn't show up to his own design meetings, and he was disheartened, or whatever the term was they used, by the way Apple was focusing on operations and not design. Look, you know, folks, we're all human, okay? Every one of us has things that we think that we don't always say. Every one of us has things that we would say behind closed doors that we wouldn't necessarily say to the public. And I'm not always saying this is good. You know, those of us who are believers in Christ, we got a separate Christian podcast we'll be announcing soon, and you can see there that, you know, I believe that there's a lot to be said for the fruit of the Spirit and trying to say the godly thing and do the godly thing. But look, we all say things. We're all human, all right? We all say things we wish we hadn't said. We all say things maybe we think are the right things to say, and maybe the public wouldn't agree. But here's the bottom line. I don't know what did or didn't happen. I think we tend to read more into this than is really necessary. Yeah, maybe, you know, there were times maybe he felt this should have gone this way or that should have gone that way. But look, that's the way it is when you put people together on various projects. I mean, that's the way things are. So I really don't fancy reading all of the incredibly speculative thoughts that tend to air towards the negative. Oh, well, he wasn't happy. They weren't happy with him. There was all kinds of, you know, that. And number two, this whole idea of where is Apple going now that Johnny Ive is not going to be on board, as if suddenly the entire company is just in limbo because of the lack of Johnny Ive. Look, Johnny Ive is an amazing guy by every estimation and every account that I've ever heard. His designs are fantastic and obviously loved by millions. But there are other people involved, and there have always been other people involved. Johnny Ive does not single-handedly embody Apple any more than anyone else did or does. And it is important to remember that ingrained deeply in all of Apple's DNA across the board is the desire to do the incredible, to change the world, to create products and services and features that customers love to use, and to truly revolutionize this. So what I'm encouraging you to understand is that I don't believe anything's going to really change. I believe that it will continue to be the awesome Apple that we know and love. And not only that, Johnny Ive will still be involved from what we hear. In other news, beyond that, another one of these where I think that all, you know, a lot of times I think that the pundits are harder on Apple than they are on a lot of other companies. And we see media involvement and they say things and they criticize things. And now we're hearing, oh, Apple News Plus. And the term floundering has actually been used. Or there was another term that indicated failure or something as well. Again, this is all because a few publishers have expressed they're not making the kind of money they hoped to be making. And they said, well, Apple promised us within a year we'd be making X amount of dollars. Guess what? It's only been a quarter of that time, barely that. We're just coming up on the 3-month mark, if I remember correctly, since Apple News Plus was introduced. And so I wish they wouldn't say this stuff, and I wish the media would not turn around and then use words like floundering and all of these things. It is, first of all, it's just plain too early on in the grand scheme of things to even use terminology like that anyway. Secondly, I don't even know that that's an accurate term, even if we were farther along. Media, the pundits, they're harder on Apple, I believe, than a lot of other companies. And Apple tends to say that's okay. They appreciate that because they aspire to greatness. And when you create great products and great services all the time, yes, people are going to have high expectations of you. So maybe that's a good thing. But the challenge is to keep the balance and to keep things into perspective. Apple News Plus is a brand new service. It has only been around, as I indicated, for 3 months. And I'm sure there will be numerous revisions. Apple tends to start out and then build from there. That's the way everything has worked with Apple. That's what their philosophy is. They've openly admitted that. And it is how they believe you accomplish greatness. It's how they believe you separate yourself from other companies. You don't implement 1,000 things right away. You implement a few that you feel you really can just rock right now, and then you build from there so that when you implement the next thing, it too is the best. And as time goes on, you allow more and more freedom for the developers and for the customers and so on. And we're seeing the same thing with iOS and now iPadOS and tvOS and all these other things as well. Same thing with the HomePod. So I really don't, I kind of take this with a grain of salt. Having said that, if you've not tried Apple News Plus, I think it's awesome. All right, so for about $10 a month, what you get is you get access to thousands of magazine subscription. All right, anything from the New Yorker, various magazines on cars and food and drink and National Geographic, lots and lots of very famous magazines and a few actual news sources as well, cover to cover. And so this is a tremendous addition to Apple News. So Apple News already gives you great free content from numerous sources. Big names like the Washington Post, CNN, Fox News, MSNBC, National Geographic, New York Times, and many, many others, Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg, all of these, as well as a lot of smaller outlets and bloggers and so forth as well, you can get onto Apple News. And that's all free. You can save the articles. They're synced with iCloud, and it's great. And you can see top stories. You can see things that are curated by Apple, but you can also pick the topics you're interested in above and beyond that. Having said that, Apple News Plus takes that to the next level by adding cover-to-cover access to all of these different magazines on many topics, hobbies, and so forth, as well as some additional news source articles cover-to-cover. So news source sources and all of their articles cover-to-cover. That's what I was trying to say. So I'm a big fan of Apple News Plus. I'm a subscriber. I think you can get a 30-day trial, so go ahead and give it a try. See what you think of it. I think you'll like it. And up to 6 people can access it using family sharing. That's the other thing. So if you got, you know, family, kids, and so forth, maybe they'll like some of them for school, you know, in some of the science and technology and nature magazines and so forth, you know, food and drink, sports, just all sorts of stuff. So I highly encourage you to check it out. The final piece of news that we're going to talk about today before we bring Trainer Cliff in, and he will comment on some of this too, PlayStation View, spelled V-U-E, has added several new channels, the tennis channel, they're adding NHL, they're keeping the ones they've had, I think one of them's moving to a standalone channel, and I believe Curiosity Stream is getting added as a standalone channel as well. Their price is going up $5 a month, but they truly are a fantastic service. And combined with Philo, P-H-I-L-O, they make for a great cord-cutting solution that provides you basically 100 or more channels, unlimited DVRs, on-demand shows and movies, simultaneous streams, a lot of sign-in access to third-party apps, and a whole lot more. And I'm bringing that up to say we're going to begin in our podcast a series on replacing the TV service with the Apple TV. Now, I mentioned we're going to do a little bit in that live stream next week on that very subject. And what we're going to do is we're going to kind of do a series of blog posts and podcasts that will help you to learn how to cut the cord and what you can expect. And that will supplement a book that is now available on Apple Books, and it is entitled Getting the Most from Your Apple TV. And so you can actually get that on Apple Books. That information is also available on the blog. And I would really love it if you'd check it out. Apple has a fantastic user guide for their Apple TV as well, but this kind of is a handbook to various services and things to keep in mind above and beyond that. I am a huge fan of the Apple TV. I really, really love it. It is great. We use it here full-time as our cord-cutting solution. We have tremendously fast internet, and then we use this Apple TV with PlayStation View and Philo and a few other services and Apple TV channels and so on. But I will be getting to all of that in upcoming episodes, so you'll be able to learn all about it. And for now, let's bring Trainer Cliff in, and he will join us and continue to talk about some of these things. All right, so there you go. Let's welcome Trainer Cliff.
Good evening.
Yeah. All right, there we are.
Or should I say good morning?
Very true. Oh my, folks, we've been trying to test some live streaming and we have just been running into weird things here with the live streaming service. And then Cliff, your brain just gets on autopilot, and I went into this app and sent you the invite to join, and I'm sitting here waiting, and I'm thinking, well, when is he going to join? And I realized I had never hit the send button. The message is just sitting there. So I think we finally have it all together now.
Yep. Sound coming in loud and clear.
Yep, same here. I was telling the folks about some of the recent news, of course, that's been kind of sweeping the airwaves. One of the biggest disruptions this week has been Sir Johnny Ive departing from Apple as an employee. Have you seen that?
Yeah. It's been all over the web since, I think, Thursday or Friday of last week.
Yeah.
I also seen I didn't read the Wall Street Journal article, but Tim Cook claimed that the allegations or the way the article was written was pure hogwash. I don't know if that's the term he used, but he just said it wasn't true.
Right. He said it was baseless, or it was I forget the wording also. You know, I just think everybody makes so much of these things when they happen. I mean, look, Steve Jobs, unfortunately, is no longer with us. I mean, and Apple has continued, and that's no disrespect to Steve or his family. He was, you know, an incredible man, and his contributions are immeasurable. But there were those who thought Apple would just evaporate after Steve Jobs, and it didn't, you know. And I don't think anything will be different in this respect either.
Right. And on the other hand, though, WSJ doesn't write a lot of untrue things. So there may be some merit to it, and maybe he's just trying to deflect the negative impact. But, I mean, there's three sides to every story. Both sides are the truth, though. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, I used to have a friend who said that no matter how flat the pancake is, there's always another side to it. You know?
Right.
and we don't know what happens behind closed doors. I mean, there may have been conversations, but they may not have been indicative of what WSJ was suggesting. You know, it's always sensationalism too. So
it could have been just something that, you know, just how rumors get started. You tell it to one person, and when it gets to that ninth person, it has no truth to it at all, or, you know, the story's never the same. So
exactly. So is it just me, or do you feel like the news media in general and the technology pundits, the bloggers and the reviewers tend to be harder on Apple than on a lot of other companies, that they scrutinize them with such a fine-tooth comb sometimes?
Well, with big success comes big responsibility. I think they do. I think you said it was either in a podcast that we did last week or in a Zoom conference that we did with our beta testers that, you know, when you are as successful as Apple, you are successful because the public or the so-called experts tend to, you know, challenge you more. So that makes them that much better. So
right. And Apple has stated that, you know, that they are perfectly fine with that, and that it does, you know, it does challenge them, and they believe it makes them better. And I mean, we are, as a society, you know, there's nothing like technology out there. I mean, you don't, you know, you don't have to look for new innovations in toothpaste tubes every year, or, you know, in lunch meat. I mean, it is what it is, you know. But if we don't see innovations, you know, every 6 to 12 months in technology, we start to think that things are falling behind.
Yeah. So, I mean, they say a computer is 10 years old after 3 months. So,
right. Exactly. So next week, of course, we're going to live stream in whatever fashion we manage to to pull that off. We'll live stream somehow. And we're going to, on July 8th, we're going to talk about the iPad as a desktop replacement and the Apple TV as a TV service replacement. And, of course, you and I, along with Rita and Lynn, who the masses have not met yet, but you all will soon enough. They'll be guests. You know, we've done these training courses, most of them free, and we've taught people how, and voiceover users in particular, but we've had some sighted users too, how to use the iPad as a desktop replacement. And of course, Cliff and I both do that pretty much full time. I don't even have a Mac in my home. I think we mentioned that in a previous podcast episode. Cliff, when did you have an iPhone already in 2010 before the iPad was announced? Were you following Apple by that point?
No, I didn't get my first iDevice until March of 2011. So I got my phone first. And I sold all my PCs. I think I had like 3 laptops and a desktop. I sold all of them to gather the money to get the iPhone.
Okay.
Then, I mean, because I was on a Windows Mobile list. And people were talking about this iPhone that was all touch and it was completely accessible. And I thought these people were full of it. So I went to Best Buy and checked it out. And they had one. And I was with AT&T at the time, so I decided to go through them because back then you could do the contract for 2 years, only pay $300. It's a little different now. They want you to pay out of pocket so they don't have to recoup that cost. Anyway, so I checked it out. Went cold turkey, even brought the little Getting Started with Your iPhone book, Braille book, to, you know, jump through hoops. And I found out about listservs and email lists and things of that nature. So that's where I learned most of my stuff. And that's why I enjoy coming into them training courses with you, because I'm giving back to what gave to me. That's where I started. So I don't have a problem helping somebody along the way to get the tools and resources that they need to learn their iDevice, because it's not easy, especially when you don't know anything.
Well, it's a whole different world, of course, and somebody said it just the other day, what you and I have often said, that you really just need to forget everything else you've learned and don't try to say, well, how does this compare to Windows, or how does this compare? Because it's its own unique thing. I started a couple years before you did. I had my first iPhone the very first time you could get an iPhone with VoiceOver, and it was, of course, the 3GS. And you know, I didn't have a lot of resources at my fingertips at that time because that there weren't any.
And that was before Bluetooth keyboard support, so it had to
be tough. Yes, it was. It was before Bluetooth keyboard support, so it was a whole new thing. I was very, very excited about it. I was, you know, I was not typically frustrated by it. It was something I really wanted to do, and I loved the idea of the iPhone right away. But I'm kind of like you. I wanted to give back because it's something that is truly life-changing, and we've said that so many times. And I think what we've talked about this in our courses, but never on a podcast, what always seems to amaze me when we do these courses, we had what, 70 students, 60 students in this last iPad course that we did.
I think it was almost 80. Yeah. We had 80 in the iPad. Cause remember we had to create two,
iTunes U sections. That's right. And what amazed me is we had people literally from all over the world. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. We had a lot of people from the United States and Canada, but we also had a couple people from, we had somebody from Zimbabwe. We had somebody from, where were some of the other places represented?
We had a couple people from New Zealand, yes, Canada.
Yep.
I think we even had a couple people from the UK. So, I mean, it was worldwide.
That's right. And I think that really indicates just how life-changing these devices are for people, how much they empower us, you know, whether it's creativity, expression, whether it's just, you know, product, you know, consumption and entertainment, whether it's work and productivity, whatever it is, you know, these devices change lives. And I think that's what, you know, I saw from the beginning and, you know, like you wanted to help as many people as we could and provide the training. Now, did you ever think, when you first got an iPhone, did you ever think that a device like that would replace whatever you had at the time as far as a desktop computer?
Well, I didn't even get an iPad until the third generation. But when I got the iPhone, frustrated, but I stuck with it, and eventually, I'm not going to say mastered it, but I got comfortable to the point where I did not use my computer. So I didn't think I would, but it eventually went that direction.
Yeah, yeah.
Especially with all the support that we got over the years with the enhancements, Bluetooth keyboard support, Bluetooth headsets, the new gestures, the things that we could do to replace our device, iDevice, not whether it be an iPhone or an iPad, with a computer. Because, like I said, I didn't like Safari on the Mac at first, but when I did get used to it, I ended up going away from it because that's when we started doing the iPad course last spring, and I enjoyed doing more stuff from the iPad. Number one, because it was portable, and number two, because it just made life much more simpler. I mean, I could. For a Windows user, you know that as Alt-Tab to go between applications, and you know, it just, you can just get a lot more done, especially with everything in one spot.
Yeah, exactly. And I think probably we've been down that road before where people have said they cared about accessibility and then never really demonstrated it. And, you know, for most of our lives up to this point, we were, you know, looking at AT companies, you know, assistive technology or access technology, spending, you know, thousands of dollars on products. And so I think a lot of us probably, when we saw VoiceOver, almost thought it was too good to be true and kind of wondered whether it was going to go away or whether it was really here to stay, you know?
Right, right. And if you guys want to hear more about Windows versus Mac or vice versa, you know, search for the Stirred Up podcast. I got a podcast that I did last week with a couple of guys that used to be Windows users. And if the episode that you want is called Tech 101. So, I mean, we have about a 40-minute conversation from coming from Windows, going over to Mac with the VoiceOver built in. And, you know, VoiceOver wasn't always perfect. I'm not going to say it's perfect now, but it wasn't always. It's way better than it was 10 years ago. And the couple of guys that I interviewed both came into the Mac world, you know, back in Tiger. When did you start? Was it Snow Leopard?
Leopard.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was back when there was no quick nav, and there was no tables and single navigation keys on Safari. So, I mean, it's a great interview. You guys should check it out. It's Stir It Up is STURITUP. Surf all the major platforms. I mean, I even got an email right before I came in here that my podcast is now available on Overcast. So,
oh, that's great. That's fantastic.
There was another one I hadn't even heard of. It was something called Podbeam or something like that. You ever heard of that
one? Oh, yes. I've heard of Podbeam. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Podbeam and Overcast now has the Stir It Up podcast.
Wow. Well, that's awesome. Well, let's touch on just a couple of those things, and whether we're looking at it from iOS versus Windows or Mac versus Windows, and even if we're just looking at the things that apply to everybody, not even just the VoiceOver users, because we could have a whole conversation about the benefits of VoiceOver over other screen readers. But I mean, right off the top of your head, even when you're not looking at VoiceOver as a factor, I mean, what else occurs to you? The lack of the need for antivirus software. I remember Steve Jobs quoting a guy by the name of Alan Kay, and the name has always stuck with me. And apparently Alan Kay made the statement that anyone who, and I may be misquoting this a little bit, so I apologize for those of you who are, you know, ready to pounce when you actually know the quote verbatim. But the gist of what he said was that anyone who is serious about software should make their own hardware, or maybe it was the other way around. The point of it was that when you do something like Windows, where one company is making the hardware and another company is making the operating system, you run into all of these compatibilities. I mean, I can't count how many times I had issues over the years with Windows and, you know, DLL files and driver support, you know, incompatibilities and all these other types of things that just don't exist on iOS or macOS, right?
Correct. And there was even an issue with HP computers being compatible with JAWS. That was one of the things that I had an issue with, like back in 2000, and I think it was 9 or 10, because I had just got a job working from home. And I had to go buy a new Dell desktop computer because, according to Freedom Scientific at the time, that was the best hardware that would support JAWS. And I can't say that they were wrong, because when I would try to load up JAWS on HP, it would stutter. It would jump around on web pages. It wouldn't even read Word documents correctly, even though I had the Office Suite installed. So I don't know, in fact, because it was an AMD process versus Intel or what, but I know that that HP computer, I had to return it because it did not work with JAWS at all.
Wow. Wow, that is
and
really
with, and with Apple, you got hardware, you got software, you got screen readers. I'm going to throw some. I'm make a statement. I'm not saying that everybody can afford a Mac. I mean, they've come down in price significantly. But when you look at the price point, let's say if I wanted a fully loaded, or not, let's say I just wanted an average consumer MacBook. Let's just call it a MacBook. It's a MacBook Air, MacBook, you know, low-end MacBook Pro. 8 gigs of RAM, a 256 SSD or maybe 128 with 2.6, what you call that? Processor.
Right, right.
That's probably only going to cost me $1,200 to $1,300. Right. That sounds like a lot of money, but I'm not paying $1,200 for JAWS. I'm not paying $800 for the desktop or laptop. I'm not paying another $300 for the anti-spyware software. Right there, I just threw out numbers that add up to over $2,000.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
you say that Macs cost a lot, but number one, they everything works together. And number two, you never have to pay for an SMA every 2 years for $200 like you do with JAWS or Windows Eye, who no longer exists. And you get great. I mean, Apple has their own accessibility line. You call them, tell them you're using VoiceOver or any of their accessibility features 24 hours a day.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, 24/7. And it's not just... You know, it isn't just, you know, how do I read with VoiceOver or how do I do this? You know, I have called them for very advanced stuff. I have called them because my wife and kids are sound asleep because I tend to be a night person and I work late at night and everybody else is asleep. And I've called Apple Accessibility to say, hey, look, I'm doing this keynote presentation. I need to share my screen of my iPad with you to make sure that this looks good. And they've been only too happy to do it. I mean, they have, you know. I mean, that's what they do. And you know, we mentioned the Mac. I don't remember the statistic back in the late 90s that at the time it was IBM, I think, or IBM was becoming Lenovo in the early part of this century, whatever. And they made a statement that something like 20% of the cost of the computer was the purchase price and the rest of it was cost of ownership, like you're talking about, that antivirus software and, you know, potential maintenance down the road and those kinds of things. And that was a, you know, a PC company, and they couldn't fully mitigate it either. You know, they tried, but as long as you're running a separate system like that. But with Apple, I mean, the Mac is just unbelievable. And then, you know, the iPad, to me, the iPad has, and a lot of people have called the iPad revolutionary. Apple referred to the iPad as magical and revolutionary when it was introduced. But I think even that is an understatement, because when you look at what it has done for consumers, what it has done for education, what it's done for small business, what it's done for folks like us who need assistive tech, it is a way of getting our hands on these things. And what's the iPad now? The sixth generation, which I am using, as a matter of fact, folks, that's what I'm doing this recording on right now. is a
well. That depends on what model you're. That depends on what model, because we're going
right.
You got the sixth generation, which is now a year old.
Right.
Then we got the iPad Pro. What is the third generation, 2018, which I'm running. But then most recently we got the iPad Air third generation.
Air 3, and then we got the Mini 5 fifth generation. And all of these are currently supported units, and for about $300 and up. And of course, mine was a little more than that, although. Mine was done through a carrier, but that's because I have a 128 gigs of storage and I have the cellular option in it. But I mean, you know, starting at basically $300 and working your way up, and people say, well, you got to put a keyboard with it if you want, you know, or your accessory. If you bought every accessory that Apple would recommend for it, you know, you're still going to be under the cost of getting one of these, you know, PCs, adding JAWS to it, adding all the other stuff that you need.
I mean, a keyboard, I mean, I got a keyboard that I use at work, and that keyboard cost me all of $12.
Right.
I mean, if you want to get fancy and buy the keyboard, Slim Folio for you, the 6th Gen, or the Slim Folio Pro, which I have for the iPad, or you can get the Bridge model, which makes it look like a MacBook Pro. I mean, there's so many keyboards out there. You even got the Apple Magic, what they call it, the Smart Folio, because it has the connector thing on it that you need no Bluetooth support for. It just connects and it works.
The Smart Connector for the iPad Pro.
Yeah, the Smart Connector. So, I mean, there's so many different things you can do. I mean, you can even go a generation back and still have great support, because I think the iPad Mini 4 is on Amazon right now for $250, and the 6th Gen that you have is like the one that you the not the cellular model but the Wi-Fi model of yours is only $329, which is $100 less than it's
sold for brand new. Price, yeah.
So I mean, there's a lot of different directions you can go, and I think Apple supplemented people's complaints over the years, because you know you used to have to pay for the iWork suite. Now that's free with any iOS or Mac that you buy, and that's Apple's version of the Microsoft suite, and Microsoft still charges for that.
Right.
I haven't confirmed it because I have no interest in Windows, but I heard that now Windows is now doing, OS updates for free now that Apple's been doing for free for almost 5 years now. So,
I think I did hear that too, come to think of it, that now that they're at Windows 10, that's going to be the foundation for everything, and everything's going to be free from here on out. But yeah.
And before you go any further, I did see an article, and I meant to comment and link you to that article, but I did see an article by somebody that, I mean, he doesn't work for Apple, but he's an Apple blogger. He's a blogger that blogs about Apple stuff. He says that he doesn't see his iPad replacing his computer yet because there's things that the iPad doesn't do. But he didn't really hit on any points that made any sense to me. I'm going to have to find that article and send it to you. But yeah, he said that the iPad's not there yet. It's not ready. I don't see how that's not possible based on what the features that they released in iOS 13. And I'm running a beta on it. I know I can't talk about it here. But I mean, there's so many things that makes it so much better than it was. I mean, it was already good.
Well, it was. And that's just it. Even with iOS 12, there's nothing that I've been longing for or pining away for that said, oh, I really wish I would have a desktop computer. There just isn't. And the stuff we can talk about in iPad OS, which, you know, we can say because it was announced publicly on stage, you know, thumb drive support, download manager in Safari.
It's funny that you mentioned the Safari, because the desktop automatically going to desktop site.
Right.
It's weird because I logged into Twitter or Periscope today when we were trying to do the live feed earlier when it on your stream in the afternoon. But anyway, I checked the email and it said that I logged into Twitter from a Mac computer. I'm like, hold on a second. No, I didn't. But then I thought about it. I logged in from my iPad. And if it's giving it the impression that it's a desktop, then that's probably the indication that it gave. But yes, it said that I logged into Twitter from a Mac computer.
Isn't that something?
But it was my iPad that I logged in from.
Wow. Yeah, I have said for a while that I think probably for 98% to 99% of the public, the iPad could be a desktop replacement. It's only those niche markets.
Unless you're Sony or Paramount or Fox 21 Studios, you don't really need a desktop computer.
And
I guess there's some. What do you say? What you always say is the Xcode that you need for the Mac for
the right apps. Yeah, if you're actually going to develop apps, like you can use Swift Playgrounds to learn basic coding, and you can program drones and robots and stuff. But yeah, if you want to make full-fledged apps, even for the iPad, you have to use Xcode on a Mac as it stands right now. I mean, it's hard to say, you know, what Apple will do in another couple of years. But yeah,
they could already be working on it and we wouldn't even know.
And we wouldn't even know. But I kind of view the iPad, I kind of view it like somebody with a giant freight truck. You know, there's a need out there for them, but it's a very small percentage of the population. Everybody doesn't need a freight truck.
Right. That's why I'm surprised that they actually refresh them every year. But I mean, it's their company. They developed the hardware, so I guess it's not a cost. Like, they're not paying Dell to make the hardware for them, so it's easier for them to recoup that cost if people don't buy a whole bunch of them. Right. But I think it's, 4-to-1 iPad to desktop computers or
I imagine
laptops. Yeah. I know that Google pulled out of making tablets because the iPad is so popular and outselling them, and I think Apple's even buying some of their parts to, you know, do their future iPads. I think that's the article that I read a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Apple has the formula. I mean, you know, they know how to make the products and the integration of hardware, software, and services, which is just so important. iCloud and continuity and all these different things. I mean, they just set the Apple products apart from anything else on the market. So other than that, the other thing we're going to touch base upon next week a little bit in our live stream then, of course, is the Apple TV as a cord-cutting solution, which I know is something very near and dear to both of us, because we've both been doing it. You've actually been doing it longer than I have, I think.
Yeah, I've been a cord cutter probably since. It's been a long time. I did have cable when I lived in Northern Minnesota back in 2012, but that was only because it came in a package deal. I never really technically watched it or used it. The kids, of course, Disney Channel, Nickelodeon, Teen Nick, and all that. But other than that, yeah, I've been a cord cutter. I call myself a triple cord cutter because I've been, you know, off the cable, the phone, and for a while I didn't have home internet either.
Yeah,
based on the fact that the cellular data on your phone doesn't move as fast, even with LTE, doesn't move as fast as, you know, broadband does. I had to go back to that, but
right
for the most part,
5G may be the first thing that changes that. 5G home internet may be, you know, if you can get this, you know, a gigabit per second of internet, or even 500 megabits per second for $50, or you know what have you, that may be the disruptor there. To traditional cord-based internet. I, you know, right now I can't see any, well, we don't have it. I mean, the only other options in our area right at this precise moment besides Comcast are like, you know, very, very slow internet because they're DSL or something. But, you know, Comcast.
Right. You told me the other day, what, 15 down? What? I couldn't imagine something that slow.
Yeah, it's 10 or 15 with that.
And I remember that too because it was, CenturyLink, I think it is?
Yes, right. Right.
Yeah, that's what we had when I was living in northern Minnesota. And I had to go to, well, at the time they were Charter, but they're probably Spectrum now. But it was Charter, and they had 100. But, I mean, I couldn't imagine 15. That's like dial-up.
and it's not, you know, in fairness to CenturyLink, it's not everywhere. CenturyLink has internet speeds of 40 meg, 80 meg. They even have gigabit fiber in some CenturyLink locations. The problem is CenturyLink and all the telcos don't have the luxury of cherry picking where they install their internet service. They're forced.
I think it goes along with the line of the same thing with that, you know, what goes with desktop computers. It's all about businesses. That's why telephone companies are still in business. Because I mean, I bet you at least, I'll be nice about it, I guess, or modest about it, because I don't really know, but I bet you every 6 out of 10 people don't have a landline phone.
Right, right. And even more businesses now are switching to VoIP or, you know, some form of internet-based phone or, you know.
Right, I remember when I was in Florida, there was a business I was looking for somebody to, I forgot what I was looking for. But anyway, they used the Google Voice number.
Yep.
They weren't using a traditional landline phone, so.
Right, right.
And now you got that, you know, iMessage for business that you can chat. Like, you can chat with Apple, you can chat with T-Mobile, you can chat with what else is there? Lund's and Home Depot and stuff like
that. Yes. Yeah.
So
there's quite a few of them.
The business world knows that people are attached to their mobile devices, and that's where they like to do 90% of their daily activity. So
exactly. And I think that's definitely proven true in cord cutting, which again, we're going to talk about that next week. And we're going to take your questions about using the Apple TV. You know, we'll talk about different services that are available, talk about, you know, what we each do for, you know, for cord cutting. But I mean, it has been a revolutionary thing for us. It's not only does it save us a lot of money, but we get more options, more content, and, right, and more features that, you know, we're using an interface that we like because we're using an Apple TV. So it feels very much like everything else we already have.
Right. I posted an article to the group today that had five free TV services that you didn't even need the email address or a credit card to sign up for. Pluto was one of them. I can't remember that.
Yeah, XUMO or something like that.
Yeah, XMO,
Pluto,
I think it's pronounced.
Pluto TV.
Sony Crackle. And I can't remember the other. Oh, what's that one? Tubi.
Yeah, well, that was one of them, I think. And that's Steer, STI something or other. I can't remember.
I will let people know about Tubi because we have it in our house, but you have to really monitor what your kids have access to on there, because they have old TV shows like Jerry Springer and Murray Pulfich and some of those reality shows where when they air, they cut out the bad language. Well, on Tubi, they don't. I mean, it's like they got the raw footage and they're playing it. So just, you know, if you have underage children in the house and you want to make sure they're being safe with the content they're watching, make sure you see what they're watching on too, because it's all, I mean, I don't think there's any parental controls or anything on that app. So.
Oh, wow. Okay. And for the folks listening, of course, that's not the case with all cord cutting apps by any means. Many of them have profiles and parental controls and,
you know, well, stuff. You know, the old saying goes that you get what you pay for.
Yeah.
it's free.
That's right.
And I know you don't have a problem with this because you follow the same blog. If you guys really want a lot of cord cutting news, Luke Bama and his buddy Jessica over at Cord Cutters News have great articles that they post every day. That's cordcutters.com or is it .net? I can't remember.
It's cordcuttersnews.com. Yeah.
Yep. So,
and they have the app as well in the app store. You can download it. But yeah, I read them every day.
I was about to say, did you ever download that app?
I didn't download that app. I just got used to going into Safari and doing it. I don't know why. I mean, I don't know.
I don't even use the app myself because I have an RSS reader that I go into. But I like the convenience of a push notification when a new article is available. And sometimes Siri reads like the first four or five lines. And right. I don't have to go worry about going open and like, maybe I don't want to read that right now.
Yeah,
so.
That is true. Yep. Well, other than that, did you have anything else that you wanted to share with the folks today?
Apple talked about it, so I can talk about it. I got an external hard drive to go with my iPad Pro this week. And, I mean, you plug it in, it lets you know that's not, the format's not right. I don't know if there's a way to format it on the iPad. I was expecting not, since it told me it couldn't even read it. So that was one of the instances where I did have to plug it into the Mac for, you know, literally 5 minutes, if that. It took longer to plug it in than it took to format. Went to Disk Utility, made it an APS file or whatever that format is, named it, and it was done. Now I plug it into my iPad, and I can download and move files to there, you know, just as if it was a storage device on a desktop. So, I mean, if that was what people were waiting for, the external drive support on an iPad is excellent. It works just good. I mean, some people say that it drains your battery on the iPhone, but I never had a desire to use it on my phone anyway. My iPad is, you know, my desktop, so that's where I do all that stuff at. So
yeah, that's good to know. Everybody will be looking forward to that, I think, who uses external storage for sure.
And it was nice too, because Western Digital is a company that you and I both know and love, and this drive came from them. And not only did they have the USB-C connection, but they had an adapter in the box that if you only had USB that you could just plug that into, and then plug that into your iPad Pro's Lightning to USB connector, and you could still connect. So
wow, that's awesome.
I don't know. I've not really seen any other news. I was kind of hoping for a beta update today, but we didn't get that. Back to the what's the guy's name that left Apple?
Oh, Johnny Ive.
Yeah, back to him. They say that he's the one who wanted to push for the Apple Watch, but once it was launched, that he kind of got laxy daisy. That's where I don't know if that came from the Wall Street Journal, because I don't even open my Apple News app anymore. But I mean, there's a lot of allegations going along, and it kind of sucks though for him as a person and his reputation, because you work all this time and you revolutionize, you help a company get somewhere, and then you leave and everybody has all this kind of speculation that's all negative. Why couldn't y'all focus on the positive things that he did for the company when he was there, instead of saying he didn't show up for meetings or he was late, he took extra vacations or whatever the article says? I didn't even read it. He did his job when he was there, obviously. Otherwise, he wouldn't have been there for so long.
That's right. And an incredible job it was, too. I mean, there's so much positive to focus on with him. His contributions are legendary. I mean, what he's done.
That's what it was. One of the things that I saw that a lot of people touched on in their articles, he wanted to make a self-driving car with no steering wheel. What does that have to do with him wanting to leave a company? I'm still trying to figure that one out.
I'm trying to envision a car without a steering wheel. I've always thought that would be an interesting idea, I guess. But, you know, I don't know.
I don't know. Maybe it would be a joystick or something, like on the old Atari 2600 back in the caveman days, as my kids call it. Because that was, what, the 70s, I think. That was
before
your
time. Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, yeah, definitely.
I don't know if kids could survive these days with something like that, because that was only one stick and one button. Now they have a directional pad, two thumbsticks, actually, it's 8 buttons now, depending on what controller you have.
That's right, so, yep.
Yep. Speaking of which, has Carson connected the Xbox or his PlayStation controller to his iPad or the Apple TV yet to see how good that support was?
He has not yet, and you know, I forgot to ask him to do that, because he was watching the presentation with me and saw that the Xbox One S and PS4 game controller support is coming to tvOS, and I guess they've said it's coming to iOS and iPadOS as well. And yeah, I would be very curious. I don't know if it's been implemented in public beta 1 or not, but I would be very curious to know his take on that. I'm kind of excited about that and about Apple Arcade.
My kids play Fortnite too, but I don't think they'd probably be too interested in connecting a Bluetooth controller to their phone. It might be more better viewed on an iPad.
On an iPad or an Apple TV. I have a lot of high expectations for Apple Arcade. I would really like to see the Apple TV take what I view as its rightful place in the gaming world, because I mean, the Apple TV, let's face it, has the processing power. It's desktop class processing power. You know, the processor on the Apple TV 4K is the same as, I think, last year's iPad, which has been said many, many times is every bit as good as many desktop class, you know, computers. So there's no reason that these big name games should be holding out when it comes to Apple TV support.
Especially with the fact now that you can have picture in picture. So a kid could be playing a game in the bottom corner and you could still be watching your TV show.
That's right.
That's going to be amazing. Like I said, I'm waiting on tvOS too, because I didn't want my Apple TV not to work complete with voiceover support. So we'll see what happens there.
Yeah. Yep.
So, but before we go, stir it up. You know, I'm across the border right now. We're still waiting on you to get on Apple and Overcast and all that.
That's right. Hopefully soon.
But just remember, folks, mine is spelled STUR, not STIR. It's STURITUP. I'm on WordPress, Twitter. What's the one we just did? Periscope. And that's also the email address for the iMessage and email between podcasts and all that. On Twitter, though, it's Stir It Up Live. So.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Check that out, everybody. And Cliff will be back with us again next week. As I said, we'll be doing our live stream. Cliff, thanks for joining tonight. Or whatever time it is at this point. When I'll probably text you here to make sure everything else is working properly on my phone, since we had those weird live streaming issues. But other than that, I'll talk to you. Thanks again for joining.
No problem. I'll have you on mine next week.
All right. Sounds good.
Bye-bye.
All right.
And once again, that was Cliff Miller. He also has his podcast. He told you what it was. Stir It Up, S-T-U-R-I-T-U-P. Check that out as well. Thanks to Trainer Cliff. Hey, before we close today, I'd like to end this broadcast with an important plea, one that I feel is important anyway. Now, I understand quality control, and I understand that the media and tech bloggers and so on and security firms have a sense of obligation to always keep tabs on what tech companies are doing. After all, who in their right mind with even a modicum of conscience would want operating systems and other software with potential security risks and privacy risks out in the wild unchecked? No one would. We all want to see the software be as stable, as secure, and as conducive to privacy as it can possibly be, and we all want to make sure that every tech company is doing its level best to maintain that sense of stability and devotion to making that all work. Having said that, and this is the plea, every year there are bound to be a few bugs here or there. We pray and we trust that there won't be many and that the ones there are will be extremely small. Nevertheless, it has been true in most years that major new operating systems, even Apple's iOS, as amazing as it is, has occasionally had a security risk. I don't know who's listening to today's podcast. I don't know if you'll care what I say anyhow, even if you are the right person to hear this, but I'm going to say it anyway. If you find a security risk and it has not been patched yet, I would love it, and I beg of you, to contact Apple, or whoever the developer is, we're focused on Apple here, through the proper channels, and wait. If you don't hear from them, contact them again, and wait. If you still don't hear from them, contact them again. Use multiple methods. Even we general consumers who don't work for security firms and virus protection companies and so on, even we have means of getting a hold of Apple. We have email addresses for Apple executives. They can be found on the company's profile pages. We have Twitter. We have Apple support. We have feedback, Apple feedback. We have a number of ways to get in touch with Apple, and Apple does care what people say, and they will respond. Notice what is missing from what I'm asking you to do. What's missing is broadcasting it to the public. Far too many times, in my opinion, I have seen articles, blog posts, warnings, YouTube videos, and more mentioning the existence of a security risk, perhaps even a fairly serious one, and then providing the masses with a step-by-step guide as to how to reproduce the security problem. I think this is extremely ludicrous. There are several reasons I believe this. The first reason is we are not all on the same level of knowledge, experience, or skill with our technology. Now, please don't read into that and say, oh, he's calling some people dumb. I am not. I absolutely am not. That would be an ungodly and very negative thing to do that I have no desire to do. People are not dumb, but you must admit, people do have different levels of knowledge. I, for example, am not capable of fixing an automobile transmission where some other people might be. So if I hear a noise in my car, I may not know what it is, while an auto mechanic or someone with lots and lots of experience might know what it is. Well, the same thing is true with technology. We don't all have the same level of knowledge, skill, and experience. Now that we can agree on that, here's what I have seen far too many times. I get contacted by customers who are panicked because of something they read on a news source or tech blog, excuse me, and they are now in a panic because they are afraid that the security risk is going to affect them and that they're going to suddenly lose their identity and all of their data. While these are theoretical risks and they do happen at times, most often it has been the case that the particular security risks they're worried about do not even affect them. That is because many of these things that are found, it is a statistical absurdity that they were even run across in the first place, and when they are, it is very difficult to reproduce them. Sometimes without being in the same room as the devices, and other times without additional equipment. Granted, that's not always the case, and there are some serious bugs. But what is the harm in repeatedly contacting Apple or any other security, any other technology company, rather than publishing an article about it as a means to get it more quickly publicized? And you might say, how long is too long? During the time that I'm silent and I'm not publishing it, isn't that security risk going unchecked where more and more people can be affected by it? And while I can understand your position, and I get it, and I can even sympathize with you to an extent, I still believe, especially for these that really take unusual and weird methods of reproducing them, I have to double-click the side button, I have to swipe in a triangular zigzag gesture, I have to lock my phone and immediately unlock it, I have to turn on voiceover, I have to swipe up halfway from the lock screen. These things that people don't deliberately do. Again, a statistical absurdity, which is, by the way, why they were not caught in the first place. Because they are extremely difficult to find, and even more difficult to find if you're not looking for them. And they're extremely difficult to reproduce until you publicize them. Now, everybody has step-by-step instructions as to how to do it. Some are panicked because they don't understand that it really isn't going to affect them. And also, you have now given those who would seek to do harm to others a playbook. You have now told everybody who actually gets their pleasure from hurting other people how they can do it. Now, suddenly, I know how to secretly find the photos of an ex who has, in my opinion, done me wrong. Or now suddenly I know how to spy on or cause the phone to freeze of the person who brought me the wrong soup at the restaurant or cut me off in traffic yesterday. You are giving people a playbook. It's like telling them, this is how you do the destructive thing. Here's the step-by-step. I am begging you, from one human being to another, this year, major new operating systems are going to be released again, as they always are. We pray there's not a single bug, in particular a security or privacy risk. But even if there is, please follow the channels. Take your time, wait for the responses, and if you don't get the responses, repeat the process. Be nice, be encouraging, and be kind, but emphasize the urgency of it. Apple, Samsung, Google, whoever you are, this is a very serious risk. This is what could happen. You didn't see it, but I'm telling you it's there. Use Apple's feedback assistant, feedback@apple.com. Any other means of getting a hold of people, call them up. Actually call tech support and say, I need you to report this. But please, if you, and again, I don't know who's going to hear this, and even if you do, you may not take it seriously, and I'm still going to love you. I'm not going to be mad at you, but I'm telling you, I sincerely believe this, and I have felt it for a long time. Don't give the public more to be panicked about, and don't give them a playbook for how to do harm to others by showing them a step-by-step procedure for destroying a device or hacking into it or otherwise exploiting some kind of bug. And that's my rant for today. I'm hoping that all your apples stay worm-free. Thanks again to Trainer Cliff. It's been great. We'll be back soon with Tech Tip Tuesdays and a whole lot more. And remember to visit our website at ttjtech.net. Follow me on Twitter @TalkTTJ. That's @TalkTTJ. And thanks so much, everybody. Stay tuned. We got a whole lot more coming in future podcasts. So take care, everybody. God bless you. Bye-bye.